Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. There's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. In hour number two, we'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at @eRadioSports, and remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. You can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. And back in studio with us, he was out last week. That, of course, is Andy Pondillo with our Major League Baseball news and notes. It's been a very busy week. Blockbuster deals that have gone down and a number of significant trades. This is an exciting time of year for you, isn't it?
It's definitely exciting, and what's interesting is how many teams are now involved when it comes to the trade deadline. When Bud Selig introduced a wild card in the mid-90s, this is what he envisioned right here, as all of these teams, literally almost the entire American League, feels like they could be in the race up until maybe a few weeks ago. Even the teams that are selling right now in the American League are teams that theoretically aren't mathematically out of this hunt. So everybody involved, you see the Royals competitive now, the Astros competitive. You know, this is a lot of fun for Major League Baseball to see how many teams are making moves and going for that World Series title.
Well, I know it's been a big day on Friday, but I think back to earlier this week, one of the significant trades that went down is Troy Tulowitzki. I mean, he is now a Toronto Blue Jay, and some say that he was disrespected by the Rockies in that deal. How do you feel? What do you say?
It's interesting because it's a business. It's always a business, and the Rockies got a good return from the Blue Jays to help build for the future. And really, when you look at this deal, Tulowitzki's been clamoring for a trade for a while. Now, there's been some stuff that's kind of come out through the grapevine that he's wanted to leave Colorado. He's tired of losing over there. He's become frustrated. You don't want to frustrate a guy in the clubhouse. I don't blame the Rockies one bit for making this move. Apparently, there was some sort of agreement that the Rockies had made to Tulowitzki, saying that he was not going to get traded this year. But I think they got an offer they couldn't refuse. Tuo gets hurt all the time. He's an MVP player, but you never know when he's going to get hurt. You unload him while he's having a healthy season. You unload him while he's batting over 300. I think the Rockies chose a good time to send him to the Blue Jays.
Okay, so let's talk about the Blue Jays. I mean, they've got a wow lineup now, don't they?
Yeah, 1-4. I would actually bat Tulowitzki leadoff now, because without Jose Reyes, they are left without a true leadoff guy, but you don't find that to be as much of a problem when you have Tulowitzki, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, all through this lineup, and you hope they stay healthy for postseason play. Russell Martin, a huge pickup for them. Will their bullpen be good enough for postseason play if you run up against a team like the Kansas City Royals? Will they even make postseason play against those New York Yankees? It can really be debated, but one thing a lot of people won't debate is they do have the best lineup in the American League East by a long shot, in my opinion.
Okay, the trade deadline, it is come and gone. Andy Pondillo with us tonight in studio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember, we'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at @eRadioSports. Of course, Andy is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. Reach out and connect to our audience all across the country, Andy.
Yes, you can connect with me at climbingtowelshill.com. The podcast is Astro Chat.
Okay, Andy, let's head out and let's talk about the team right here in our backyard that is certainly making and continues to make headlines, and that is the Houston Astros. They traded for pitcher Scott Kazmir last week. How do you see this move?
I really like this move. It's a rental for the Astros. Scott Kazmir is a Houston guy, so he definitely wants to be here, pitch for home, says it's a dream come true to be in Houston, and now you match him up with Dallas Keuchel. You've got to view him as a rental, though, because you never know if these guys are going to sign once free agency hits. Money talks, and so do years, and there's teams that will give pitchers an amount of years they shouldn't be giving them, but it happens time and time and time again. So will he stay in Houston? I don't know, but I like what he does for the Astros this season. To pair him with Keuchel, Lance McCullers has been dominant in that rotation. It's really a deep rotation now. If they can get the guys to produce, a Scott Feldman, a Colin McHugh, will they be good enough to get you to postseason play? You got to hope so, but at the top, the 1-2, Dallas Keuchel, Scott Kazmir, I think the best 1-2 in all of the American League at this time.
You know, Andy, I totally agree with you. Keuchel and Kazmir, I mean, that's a great 1-2 punch, good as any in the American League. And so this obviously was powerful. But what ultimately, what's the bottom line? I mean, what did this cost the Astros when you start thinking long-term?
Well, it cost them a young pitcher. It cost them Jacob Nottingham, a young catcher, who has been, a lot of people would say, could be a future MLB catcher. It's so hard to tell with these guys. These are low-A guys. When they're at that age, they can put it. I've seen guys in single A ball hit 43 home runs and come to the majors and they can't hit five. So what do you really know about these guys when they're that far down? It's hard to tell. They weren't top five premium prospects for the Astros. But yet again, like I said, there's times where prospect number 28 ends up being your superstar. So it's really a lottery drawing when you make these deals. And that's why teams that sell, they need to do it right. They need to just blow the whole thing up. They need to get 12 prospects, and your chances get a lot higher when you have quantity. And that's what the Astros did at one time. That looks like what the A's are now doing is they trade Kazmir, they trade Zobrist, they're reloading up on prospects. And I think it's a good move for Oakland to try and get competitive quick while losing this season. As for the Astros, you never really know what the cost is going to be, but they have a deep farm system, what some would say the deepest farm system in all of the MLB, so they can afford to spend prospects.
They have a deep farm system, but do you like it? It seems like they've been conservative in terms of what their moves. They're very strategic, and they're not, just not going after anybody.
Yeah, they're not going to trade the entire farm for a rental player. That doesn't seem to be in their DNA. So they want to make smart moves. They want to make moves for guys that aren't going to cost them, let's say, a Lance McCullers for a couple months of a season. They're going to be methodical in how they do it. And really, Jeff Luna's been pretty aggressive this season. Since the beginning of the year, you've heard him in talks for trades. And it's been a good thing for Astros fans. They really feel like they can compete. There's over 30,000 people at weekday games again. It feels like 2005. So we're all good news for the Astros, and I would assume you see them dabbling in some more deals this offseason into next season. There's definitely going to be a lot of free agents available.
Okay, Andy Pondillo with us in studio tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Always our MLB news and notes, and as we zero in on the Astros, they continue to play good at home, but they have struggled a little bit. I don't like to be critical of our Astros, but I mean, they have struggled on the road.
They've struggled quite a bit on the road, and it's usually to the tune of losing 2 out of 3. It's not always getting swept, but you know, they played the Royals on the road in their last road series. They lost the series, but they still looked okay doing it. They didn't get just run out of KC like a few teams have. And, you know, it's one of those young team things. I think they get on these long road trips, and for some reason they lose their mojo. These young guys very comfortable hitting at Minute Maid Park, and we've seen from the early years of Minute Maid Park, when the Astros were good, an extreme home field advantage over there. If you can put a speedy center fielder to cover a lot of ground, if you can get some right-handed hitters that know how to kind of manifest a swing for the Crawford boxes, is a little bit of a different swing and hooking the ball out there. We've seen guys make a living off hitting Crawford box home runs at Minute Maid Park, so I think they've got a good feel for that park. Regardless, it's hard to get home field advantage throughout postseason play. If you end up in a one-game playoff in the wild card, it may not be at home. So they've got to do better on the road. You know, regardless, it's great we're even talking about this because at the beginning of the year, we're happy to finish 500. Now you're talking about winning 90 games. You're talking about playing over 500 ball on the road. This is all the maturity of this team has moved way faster than what I would have expected. And this may be, you know, the one nitpicky thing that I've had for a while now is they've got to play better on the road. But if that's their biggest ordeal, at least they're winning at home and offsetting those losses.
We're getting ready to take a commercial break. How have they been able to accelerate that process so quickly? Because as you're saying, you know, they can not only get above 500, but they could go very deep into the playoffs.
A superstar power always does that. And you got that in Dallas Keuchel, who nobody would have expected to be this good. But Carlos Correa, who everybody seemed to expect to be this good. They had him on ESPN Wednesday Night Baseball comparing him to Mike Trout at 20 years old. They're already comparing the two, saying these guys are going to play against each other for a long period of time. This guy is the type of impact player that where you don't think about baseball as one player winning you a game, and really it is impossible, but one player to take over an offense, one player to continuously save you defensively at a premium position like shortstop, this guy has the signs of one of the truly great shortstops in Major League Baseball. I have not seen a 20-year-old player come up, for the Astros at least. I guess I've seen it for other teams, but not for the Astros and do what he's doing at such a quick pace.
Okay, our MLB news and notes each and every week with Andy Pondilla right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. In hour number two, we're going to step aside just for a quick commercial break. We'll be rejoined with much more of Andy Pondillo. Back with you at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell going one-on-one with Andy Pondillo in our weekly Major League Baseball news and notes. And as we continue to zero in on the Astros, you know, we talk about how the Astros, Andy, I mean, they really held their ground with the Royals. They won the series against the Angels. What, in your mind, has been the best series so far that kind of reveals the core and what this team is made of and eventually what they'll be able to accomplish?
Well, the first time they played the Royals, they swept the Royals and basically ran them out of Minute Maid Park. Now, granted, you can put an asterisk by it because Eric Hosmer was not in the lineup. But again, it's only one player. And the Astros really, I feel like, made a statement when they were able to sweep the defending American League champions. It's been an interesting season because they've competed well against really top opponents this year. We've seen them beat the Angels time and time again. We've seen them beat teams that were supposed to be good. And they've been a good part of why the Mariners are so far down the American League West, because they've beat up on Seattle quite a bit this year. So they've had a few moments this year where they've looked really awesome. And then, like any young team, they'll fall down, maybe lose five games in a row, but they get right back up. So the resiliency has been something special. But that Royals series, to me, was what signified to the national pundits out there that maybe the Astros are a little better than we've given them credit for.
So where is that bounce back ability? Where is that coming from in this resilience you're talking about?
I think it's the belief. All these young players, they've come up through the minor league system and all they've done is won. They won in single A, double A, triple A. They were not a part of the Astros losing 100 games, you know, 2012, 2013. They only come up here expecting to win. Now, it definitely helps when you have Dallas Keuchel on the mound, Lance McCullers on the mound. These guys are holding the offenses down. It gives them a chance to come back. But even then, I've seen them down 5-1, and these guys are still taking smart at-bats. Let's say they've struck out 10 times through the first five innings. They're still able to put up a 4 or 5 spot in the seventh. This is a very unusual offense with so many young guys producing the way they are. Really without that true middle-of-the-order power Albert Pujols-type guy, and maybe that becomes Carlos Correa, but it's hard to expect that from a 20-year-old. So it's just belief, I think. These guys believe in each other, and when one guy doesn't succeed, another one's going to pick them up.
Well, and you have a roster that you're talking about with so many young players. There were really not high expectations on this team at all, so they don't have any pressure on them, and they kind of want to go out and prove themselves.
Yeah, they've already won. Really, if they were to finish two games back and not make postseason play, I think a lot of people would be disappointed, but then they would sit down and think about it and be like, wow, this team did really well for what they ran out there this year. So I think that it's already a win for the Astros this season to be relevant into August, to have so many young guys maturing so quickly. And really, I said it last segment, it all really centers around Carlos Correa on the field. The shortstop, he's stealing bases, he's hitting home runs. I mean, he pairs so well with George Springer and Jose Altuve at the top of the order. Just Springer cannot get back soon enough.
You know, one of the things I want to bring up, and we've talked about this, Andy, is it seems like since the All-Star break, the team, obviously, that they're in sync, they've come into gear, but several players have stepped up for other injured players, like what George Springer you were just talking about.
Yeah, George Springer's been down, so Altuve assumed the leadoff position. He's done a fabulous job. Marwin Gonzalez has batted second quite a bit. Both of them have really picked up the slack. The interesting thing I watch with Altuve is his run production has gotten a lot better this season, and really that is attributed to a much more potent offense the Astros run out there. Yet you watch the maturity on this guy. He's only 25 years old. We think of him now as a veteran because, you know, he's in his fourth season with the Astros. But man, this guy, 25 years old, we talk about Craig Biggio, who just went into the Hall of Fame. We look at his numbers. He didn't start hitting for power until about 5 years in the majors. He was more of a doubles guy. He always had doubles and home runs. The power came later. Altuve's starting to show those signs of not only being a singles and doubles hitter, but also being a power hitter that can drive a ball out, and also being a guy that can, you know, get some RBI. Could he be a 70, 80 RBI leadoff man? I think it's possible in the future at some point with the power that he's now offering to this team. So it really what he's providing at the top of the order has made a huge difference without George Springer.
So physically, is he getting stronger, or is it that confidence factor that you're talking about with Jose Altuve?
I think he's learned when to take a big swing. There are certain guys that go up there and they take these massive home run hacks and they're down in three pitches. I feel like Altuve kind of chooses his points when he wants to try to drive a ball in his game situations. He's matured a lot as a hitter, and will he bat 340 again like he did last year? I don't know. That's hard for a hitter to reduplicate that. But can he be a 295 to 315 hitter who hits 20 home runs a year? You know, I would sacrifice batting average for that. He's starting to show that pop at the top of the order. I really believe it has a lot to do with pitch selection. I think he takes a few more pitches now. He stays aggressive, but he knows when he's just got to slap a ball to the left side. And he knows when he wants to drive one out of the park.
He's got that patience at the plate. Hey, Andy Pondillo with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at @eRadioSports. Give some love to Jed Lowry. Now rejoins the team and has been very steady with his bat.
Yeah, he was very good for the Astros before he went out, and they need him to really produce like he did before. Now, will he be a 300 hitter? Is he going to hit for a lot of power? Probably not, but what he does add is diversity to the Astros offense, an offense that's feast or famine at times, and when they get in slumps, they can look awful out there. So getting that veteran back, having him bat maybe second, maybe in the middle of the order, you can put him in different roles, a good guy to hit and run with, a guy to drop a bunt down. You know, Jed Lowry will be a very good attribute to that offense going through the final 2 months of the season.
Okay, we're quickly running out of time. Andy Pondillo with us with our Major League Baseball news and notes. I want to jump around just for a moment. The Angels, they reshaped their outfield. Just talk about some of the situations that are some of the movement that's taken place there.
Yeah, Matt Joyce has been awful for them in left field, so instead of filling his role with one guy, they decided to fill it with three. So they get three guys that probably could get banged up at any time, three veterans, David Murphy, Victorino, and David DeJesus. You know, they're all three solid hitters. They've all had pretty decent careers. I think David Murphy's probably the best of the three at this point in his career. But, you know, it gives you some platoon options, I guess. Getting three outfielders to fill one slot felt a little extreme to me. But I guess with the injury history some of these guys have, maybe they're just taking an extra precaution going into possible postseason play.
Andy Pondillo with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Thanks so much. Kicking off hour number two. Great job.
Sounds good.
All right, much more straight ahead tonight in our MLB as Michael Emmerich's going to be joining us, author, sports writer of his new book, 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Stay close. Hey, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. Join us online. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at @eRadioSports. You can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. And remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download that Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. Well, it has been a very big week in Major League Baseball. The trades, the blockbuster deals that have gone down. And it's very interesting to watch how all these trades, how they will eventually work themselves out. And for the Seattle Mariners, it seems like they've had limited options. Most believe that the Mariners were in a position to being committed to selling at the trade deadline. And it is time now to welcome in Michael Emmerich. He is a sports writer, author of his brand new book. It is the ultimate resource for true Mariner fans. It is titled 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's Michael's first time on the show. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Of course, I have to remind our audience that Michael Emmerich is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. And Michael, it is hard to believe the month of July. It is now over. It's been such a tough season for the Mariners. I always try to be objective on our show as possible. I mean, why are they reaping these results? Is this what you anticipated at the start of the season?
Certainly not. You know, we thought that the sort of dark decade was finally behind us. Of course, the dark decade has actually been closer to 15 years of misery. But, you know, last year they won 88 games, missed the playoffs by just one game. You know, we had a new manager, Robbie Cano, had pretty much lived up to our expectations during the off season. The Mariners signed Nelson Cruz. You know, that was the one sort of hole in the lineup. I mean, the Mariners have really lacked power for years. I mean, they have had trouble scoring runs. It seems like ever since Jay Buhner retired, or Brett Boone left, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's been so. We thought, oh my gosh, you know, Nelson Cruz, he is, you know, the man of our dreams. He has, you know, I mean, you know, he hits what 30, 40 homers last year. Anyways, and he has been fantastic this year. I think the problem has been, you know, some of the young pitching hasn't lived up to expectations. You know, they're just not ready. Paxton, Walker, the bullpen last year was absolutely airtight. The entire pitching last year was historically great. They were reprising, you know, a pitching staff from the '60s. They just were incredibly tough to score on. This year, The defense hasn't been quite as solid, and the back end of the rotation didn't live up to expectations. And once again, the offense has sort of circled down the deep abyss, and it's struggling pretty much on a daily basis to score runs. So that, in a nutshell, is, I think, the problem that is the 2015 Seattle Mariners.
What is the key to the turnaround?
Well, I think the key to the turnaround is to see Tuan Walker continue his ascent. He's the number, I guess we want to call him maybe the number three or four starter. He's in his early 20s. Paxton is he's been on and off the DL. I think once he gets healthy, he will start pitching the way everyone had fantasized. And there was this little issue with Cano, apparently, which he revealed about a month ago. Apparently, he had been battling some kind of not really a virus. No one really knows. He's not real forthcoming about exactly what it was. But he had some stomach problems that had been bothering him for like the last 8 months. And he finally went public with it about a month ago. Ironically, ever since he sort of went public with that information, he's been hitting like the old Robbie Cano. His power has returned, and so he and Cruz are starting to add some stability to the offense. So, Seager is Kyle Seager at third base is one of the best, probably third basemen in the league that no one's ever heard of. But he is having another solid season. So I really believe by the end of the year, we're going to see the Mariners playing a little bit better. And I think if they can add maybe a couple more bats for 2016, that we could maybe see them reprise their 2014 success. I tell everybody that, baseball fans, overall, they tend to be optimistic personalities because, you follow a sport where success is measured by being successful only 30% of the time. So I think I'm fairly optimistic going forward, but that's probably just my nature as a baseball fan.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Michael Emmerich, author, sports writer, has just released his new book from Triumph Books, 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We are going to shine the spotlight on that here momentarily. But talking about just the positive production in terms of they're trying to stabilize this offense for the Mariners. Slugger Nelson Cruz, he certainly has provided that. But, when you look at the stats, this is a lineup that's averaging under 4 runs per game. How key has been Edgar Martinez, the new hitting coach? He came on board in the month of June. Yeah. What kind of impact has he had?
I think it's been kind of negligible, frankly. I think back to when the Royals were struggling offensively a couple years ago, and they hired George Brett, Hall of Famer George Brett, and everyone thought we have finally, found the key to turning around this offensive ineptitude. But alas, the offensive ineptitude continued, and finally drove Brett back to the front office. I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence that a hitting coach, even one as accomplished as Edgar, who, by the way, should, I think, be in the Hall of Fame, I don't think he's going to make much of a difference. I think the difference is going to have to come basically from within, and I think it's going to have to come from a reinvigorated Robinson Cano, and some production maybe from places that we're maybe not expecting. Perhaps from Logan Morrison at first base. Maybe the shortstop tandem will suddenly pick up the pace. But I think that's what's going to have to come from this year. That's for sure.
How risky of a move is that to have a midseason coaching change like that? And when we're talking about Edgar Martinez, the new heading coach, and did you even see this coming?
Did I see it coming? Oh, yeah. There had been, a clamor certainly among the fan base for some kind of change for a while. So that doesn't surprise me. I'm just not a big believer in those kinds of changes at the margins, if you will, changing a hitting coach, changing a pitching coach, can make that but much of a difference on balance. Maybe he can get through to a guy. You know, maybe there's one hitter in the entire lineup who he can get through to. You know, who the previous coach could not. But for the most part, I just don't think it'll make that big of a difference. I just think, you know, the GM has to do, I guess, a better job. And the guys who are in the lineup currently have to sort of motivate themselves, if you will.
Well, what are your thoughts on the job, the trust, the leadership that in Lloyd McClendon and the job that he's doing as a manager?
I mean, I don't think that the results would be different if anyone else was in the driver's seat right now. Lloyd did a fantastic job last year. You know, he took a team that hadn't had a winning season in 7 years and won. So I don't think you can put the blame on Lloyd McClendon at all. I just think it's the sort of vagaries of the game, right? You just don't know what's going to happen when you've got, you know, two-thirds or two-fifths of your starting rotation is made up of guys who are younger than 22 years old. Mm-hmm. So you got to let the back end of the rotation made up of these guys with incredible talent but no experience. You just got to let them work through the growing pains. And I think that's what's happening right now. Now last year, you know, the Mariners in the back end of the rotation, they had Chris Young, who was fantastic for like two-thirds of the season. Then they let him go, which I thought was the right move. And of course, he's having a fantastic year in Kansas City, which, I mean, he's one of these guys who just, you know, he defies description. I mean, he barely throws 90. I don't want to start talking about the Royals here, but I mean, Young is he is just a freak to me. I mean, he lives off the upper end of the strike zone with a fastball that doesn't even exceed 90. I mean, and he's a right-handed pitcher. There aren't many guys like that. Anyway, so he provided back-end stability to the rotation, and then this year they didn't re-sign him, let him go, and they handed the keys over to a couple of very young pitchers who are incredibly talented, and they are working through their issues.
Michael Emmerich joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're up against the clock. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be rejoined with Michael Emmerich and highlight his new book, 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Hey, Michael Emmerich is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you are along with us. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. You can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. We've invited Michael to be on with us tonight because we're talking about his new book here momentarily. It is titled 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. But since we have Michael on, we wanted to get the pulse on the Mariners, why they are struggling mightily. And so here we are in the month of August. I mean, Michael, what is the forecast? I mean, how do you see this season playing out?
I would be happy if the Mariners could play slightly above 500 baseball. I mean, I think at this point the playoffs seem like a pipe dream. I would like to see more consistency from the back end of the rotation. I'd like to see obviously some inklings of offense from a few positions. Like at shortstop, like at first base, like in center field. I don't know, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen. I would love to say, geez, let's call up, you know, Alex Jackson or Peterson or something, but I'm not sure that they're the answers, either short-term or, I hate to say this, even long-term. So I'm just looking for a team that can win a few more games that they can lose, and then let's retool during the offseason.
Well, let's shift gears here. Michael Emmerich with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, because we're quickly running out of time. His new book is titled 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And as they're muscling through this difficult stretch right now of this season, let's relive for all the Mariner fans out there some really great memories. So first of all, tell us about the layout of the book and what you've included.
So the book is, I like to say that it is, you remember, I don't know if fans remember the cultural literacy book that was very popular maybe 20 years ago, which was a list of all of the things that a well-educated American should know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of view this book as this is the equivalent of sort of the cultural literacy book. It is for Mariners, and it is the Mariners literacy book. So it includes, I hope, everything that a well-educated Mariners fan should know. And it goes all the way back to the very beginning, even before that, because you can't really know Mariners history unless you know all of the Michigas that happened before the Mariners even became a franchise. So I go all the way back to the Seattle Pilots and the departure of the Pilots and then the lawsuit that brought forth the Mariners. I mean, I think the Mariners are the only franchise in history who were created because of a lawsuit. A rather dubious distinction. So the book, so it goes all the way back to those, the first sort of 15 years. I guess Mariner history had been divided into three components. There's the first 15 years, which were even darker than mm-hmm. the last 15 years. And then there was the great, the great period of the 90s when Ken Griffey Jr. was a household name and he was rivaling Michael Jordan as one of the most popular athletes in the country. And for Seattle fans, that was some pretty heady stuff. You know, no one pays much attention to Seattle sports, or certainly before that, no one had ever paid any attention. The Seahawks had some kind of amusing games on Monday Night Football, if you will, back in the 80s. Ken Griffey Jr. was the first Seattle superstar. And needless to say, heavy emphasis in the book on those great years, Griffey and Martinez and Buhner and Randy Johnson, of course, A-Rod. I suppose Mariners fans certainly remember, but there may be some of your general baseball fans who have forgotten that A-Rod started his career in Seattle.
Well, Michael, you assembled the facts, the traditions, the achievements that will certainly educate and entertain fans. Give us some stories in terms with Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, what specifically did you share? And obviously, the time that he spent with his father there, too.
Well, that's
huge.
That is a sort of a separate item in the book, that season and a half when Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. played together. It's funny, they both think that the other brought out the best in them. The interesting thing is that Ken Griffey Sr., in his very illustrious career, he was never really much of a home run hitter. And I think in his career before he joined the Mariners, he only hit 58 home runs. Then they put him in front of Junior. And in his first month as a Mariner, he hit like four or five. I think he hit four home runs. And he liked to say, well, if I had hit in front of Junior my entire career, I probably would have hit 200 home runs, that sort of thing. So, and for Junior, having his father around was a great, settling influence. And that is really when his game started to take off, was when his father joined the Mariners. And, of course, they're the only father-son combo to hit back-to-back home runs in the history of MLB. They're also the only father-son combo to hit home runs as teammates in the history of baseball.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too. You did include in the book, you talked about when King Griffey Jr., that the Mariners almost passed on him. I found that a bit surprising.
In the 87
amateur draft.
Yeah, the M's owner had been burned the year before. The M's had been burned the year before by drafting an 18-year-old high school shortstop. And they were a little, because they were a little wary of committing to a high school player again. Matter of fact, they wanted to draft a guy named Mike Herkey, who ended up having a modestly successful major league career. I think Cubs fans might disagree with that. I think he ended up with the Cubs. But there was serious discussion about passing on Griffey and going with a college pitcher. And M's scouting director, Youngward, was an advocate of Griffey from the start, and he lobbied the M's owner, Argris, and finally got the M's on board with the decision to draft Griffey. Although he was told that if Griffey did not work out, it would cost him his job. So there was a lot of pressure I guess, on the scouting director once he made the decision. But I would say, I think we could all agree, it was an inspired decision.
Absolutely. Hey, Michael Emmerich is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We have a couple more minutes. We want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of his book, 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And as I said earlier, it is truly is the ultimate resource for true Mariner fans. And one of the names that comes to my mind is Randy Johnson, of course, was just put in the Hall of Fame, played for the Mariners. What did you share about him?
Well, you know, there's a lot of... So Randy had a fantastic career as a Mariner, of course. It seems like his time as a Mariner, though, was a little overshadowed by what happened at the end of his time with the Mariners. I mean, fans remember that he was a pending free agent. The M's decided they weren't going to re-sign him, and he went out and had probably the four worst months of his career. And a lot of local reporters thought that he was tanking in order, you know, in hopes that the M's would trade him because he was tanking. Of course, that seems counterintuitive because if he really wanted to be moved, you'd think that he would actually be doing everything he could to sort of pad his resume so that he would be of interest to another sort of contending franchise. Anyway, so the M's ends up trading him, and at the time, the haul seemed a little underwhelming. David Ski, a teammate, said it was the darkest day in Mariner history. And David Ski didn't even like Randy Johnson.
Yes, Michael Emmerich has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We are flat out of time. I'm going to encourage you to go out and get a copy of the book, 100 Things Mariner Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, from 1977 debut through the lean years to the 2014 resurgence. These pages in the book will help you rediscover the remarkable people, places, and events that celebrate this very special baseball team. Michael, congratulations on the book. You're a great guest. We'd love to have you back. Lots of information, and hopefully the Mariners, they'll turn the corner and get this thing turned around.
I think they will. As I said, I'm an optimist.
Very good. Hey, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
You bet. Very special thank you to Michael Emmerich and all of our amazing guests and our lineup tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to join us each and every week right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, yahoosportsradio.com. And you can join us at Twitter at @eradiosports. We'll see you next week.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.